demeanor on the first court hearing in the trial of the ringleader of a terrorist group and examines evidence of his connection to the FBI and Mossad. 3,000 Yemeni children with cancer are at risk of death due to years of Saudi blockade. And fresh anti-racism protests erupting in U.S. cities sparked by a fatal police shooting of a young African-American in Minneapolis. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. Now, Iran has held the first court hearing in the trial of the ringleader of a U.S.-based terrorist group known as Tondak. During the session, the prosecution detailed the connection of Jamshid Sharma to the FBI and the Israeli spy agency Mossad. The prosecution said that Sharma had planned 23 bombings in Iran, 5 of which took place before his arrest in August 2020. The biggest was a bombing of a mosque in the city of Shiraz in early 2008 that killed 14 civilians and injured 200 others. Also earlier this week, a senior member of the Tondar terrorist outfit was arrested. Iran has filed a complaint with the United Nations over the U.S. hosting of the group. The Iranian foreign minister has ruled out a possibility of accepting an interim and limited agreement in talks aimed at reviving the 2015 deal, the JCPOA. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says that Tehran wants to reach a good deal that secures its national interests. The top diplomat welcomed the sanctions waiver that the U.S. granted Tehran on Friday. Amir Abdullahian, however, said that practical measures by the U.S. and the remaining JCPOA parties matter to Iran rather than what happens on paper. Iran and those JCPOA parties are expected to resume negotiations in the Austrian capital in the coming days. Tehran wants the removal of sanctions that the U.S. imposed following its unilateral pullout in 2018. Tehran also seeking guarantees that Washington won't leave the deal again. A political analyst, John White, says Iran will not be fooled by small moves from the U.S., such as the latest sanctions waivers in the Vienna talks. He says that the Islamic Republic will be looking for different economic options.
That the U.S. arbitrarily put out this agreement, though this agreement was never ratified by U.S. Congress, and they've used that loophole in order to justify doing so. But the U.S. is going to shoot itself in the foot. Its foreign policy has been a disaster under both Trump and Biden. 130,000 Russian troops on Ukraine's border is testament to the disaster of U.S. foreign policy. So I don't think the Iranians will be fooled in any way about how they're going to progress these talks. I think they're looking for other options in terms of economic partners. They're drawing closer to China, signing a big multi-billion dollar deal with China over 30 years, and also drawing closer to Russia. That's the way ahead for Iran. So these are birth pangs. The Iranians are negotiating in good faith. They have done absolutely nothing wrong. And for the Biden administration to try and introduce non-nuclear issues about Iran's so-called support for terrorism in the region and other sundry items on their agenda, that's just proof positive that the US speaks through forked tongue. There are other actors behind the scenes as well who've been lobbying furiously in Washington. The Saudis, they have a vested interest in keeping Iran's oil off the world market. And obviously the Israelis, who are doing everything in their power to weaken Iran because they fear a strong and stable Iran in the region for hegemonic reasons.
A crippling siege on Yemen has taken a heavy toll on civilians, and children seem to be bearing the brunt. Authorities warning that a Saudi blockade has put more than 3,000 kids with cancer at risk of death. The health minister says that nuclear medicine cannot be shipped into Yemen due to the siege that has been in place since 2015. The medication is desperately needed for cancer treatment. Taha al-Mutawakkil demands an urgent reopening of the Sana'a airport to allow patients to travel abroad for treatment. He says that the use of prohibited weapons by the Saudi-led coalition has doubled the number of cancer patients in Yemen. The number of children suffering from blood cancer is also increasing dramatically. Well, administrations in the United States have changed hands between Democrats and Republicans since the outbreak of the Saudi-led war in Yemen. No matter which government holds the reins, Washington sticks to the same policies. More than 7 years on, the U.S. continues to provide the coalition with unwavering military and diplomatic support, making itself complicit in Yemen's war crimes. In the next report, we'll review how three U.S. administrations missed their chances to end one of the world's bloodiest wars.
When Saudi Arabia launched an air campaign on Yemen in March 2015, it assured the U.S. administration of President Barack Obama that it would oust the Ansarullah movement within months. But the war, aimed at restoring a former friendly government in the Yemeni capital Sana'a, dragged on with limited military gains. Under Obama, whose government had close bonds with Saudi Arabia, indiscriminate and disproportionate airstrikes continued on Yemen. Homes, markets, schools, hospitals, weddings, and funerals were targeted with U.S.-made weapons, including widely banned cluster munitions. An all-out Saudi blockade exacerbated Yemen's health and nutrition crises, and diseases like cholera began to spread like wildfire. And all those happened amid military and diplomatic support provided by the Obama administration. The U.S. also stood silent in 2016 when Saudi Arabia, through threats of cutting funds to the UN, finally forced the world body to drop it from its list of the worst offenders against children for its attacks on Yemeni kids. Obama lost all chances to stop the slaughter. Donald Trump followed in the footsteps of his predecessor in supporting Saudi Arabia and made his first trip as U.S. president to the Arab Kingdom. Hours after landing in the Saudi capital Riyadh on the 20th of May 2017, Trump sealed a $350 billion arms deal with King Salman, the largest in world history. The transaction included tanks, combat ships, missile defense systems, as well as radar, communications, and cybersecurity technology. 2 years later, the U.S. president vetoed a bipartisan resolution to force stop America's involvement in Yemen's bloodshed. Like Obama, Trump, too, missed all the chances to end this slaughter.
This war has to end.
That's what incumbent Joe Biden said last year, just weeks into his presidency, announcing an end to U.S. assistance for Saudi Arabia's offensive operations in Yemen, as well as relevant arms sales. However, months later, that promise was broken as his government approved two arms deals worth over $1 billion. To support the United Arab Emirates against Yemen's retaliatory attacks, the U.S. is now deploying a destroyer and fighter jets in the UAE, a key member of the Saudi-led military coalition. France also says it will give military support to the UAE to help it protect its airspace. The Biden administration is also planning to bring Yemen's Ansarullah movement back on a U.S. blacklist. Aid organizations warn that the move would prevent the delivery of critical humanitarian assistance to millions of innocent people and could have adverse humanitarian consequences.
It will have much effect on Yemeni civilians because many UN agency and NGOs are working in Yemen. If the United States will continue or if they will declare the Houthi as a terrorist group, this will have a huge and a bad effect on Yemeni civilians.
By sticking to warmongering policies, the current U.S. president is also missing on his chances to stop the war, a conflict that the UN says has already turned Yemen into the largest humanitarian crisis in the world.
Racial tensions heating up in the U.S. again, hundreds of protesters turning up in Minneapolis to demand justice for a young African-American killed by the police. The death has reopened the wounds caused by the police murder of George Floyd 2 years ago and renewed debates over rampant racism and police violence in U.S. society.
Racist system!
No good judges in a racist system!
U.S. police violence targeting black people has once again brought Americans to the streets in the northern city of Minneapolis, which is still reeling from the police murder of George Floyd, a black man, in 2020. This time, the victim is Amir Locke, a 22-year-old African-American who was killed when police stormed into his apartment without warning on Wednesday. Hundreds of protesters rallied in the city, calling for the arrest of officers involved in the shooting and an end to discriminatory law enforcement tactics. Similar protests were held in New York City. The officers were carrying out a no-knock search warrant on the apartment. The city's mayor has now announced a suspension of no-knock warrants that have been at the center of heated debates over rising police violence. back in 2020, the city restricted the use of such unannounced raids as part of a series of reforms that were introduced following mass anti-racism protests.
They barge in before they ever identify themselves, and they give Amir no time to save his own life. And that's something that we don't see white citizens encounter. And the fact that it's happening in Minneapolis again is beyond tragic. It's abhorrent.
Locke's parents say their son was a beloved member of his community and a law-abiding citizen. Locke's death has reopened the wounds caused by the murder of Floyd and a dozen of other recent victims. Official figures show that black men are three times more likely than white men to be killed by police during their lifetime. But police bullets, batons, or knees are not the only concerns to African Americans. The deep-rooted anti-black racism also shows itself in inadequate access to health care, food, housing, and jobs. In 2020, the injustices long felt by African Americans triggered a nationwide protest movement challenging police brutality and bias in the U.S. criminal justice system. And that movement transformed into a global campaign to fight racism and build a world free of discrimination and supremacist ideologies.
Across the border, Canada, police in capital Ottawa are asking for a surge of resources to deal with what they call the siege of the city by protesters. The police chief says that truckers' rallies against vaccine mandates are triggering, in his words, a nationwide insurrection. Protests have been held in Ottawa as part of so-called Freedom Convoy. Also, other cities, including the financial hub Toronto, have been facing disruptions with truckers blocking roads and shutting down several areas. Quebec has also been rocked by similar events. The move began on January 22nd after truckers converged on Ottawa to announce obligatory vaccination for cross-border travels. But it quickly morphed into protests against COVID restrictions and the government of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Organizers now saying that they're expecting their numbers to swell into tens of thousands. The controversy around British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is thickening as one of his most loyal backbench supporters says that his removal is inevitable. Former Tory lawmaker Sir Charles Walker has implored the Prime Minister to step down into national interests. This as Johnson is facing mounting pressure to resign over his handling of Downing Street's lockdown parties. The so-called Partygate scandal has caused several MPs to turn their backs on the Premier and prompted five senior number 10 aides to resign. Johnson could face a vote of no confidence in his leadership if 54 of his 360 Conservative lawmakers submit a letter of no confidence. So far, a dozen MPs have publicly turned on the Prime Minister and submitted such a letter. A U.S. intelligence assessment showed that Russia has built up 70% of the force it would require to attack Ukraine along its borders. Biden administration officials have told lawmakers that Russia has so far amassed 110,000 troops in the border area. They say the speed of the military buildup means there will be enough troops for a larger scale invasion by mid-February. But they say it's not clear whether Russian President Vladimir Putin has decided on an invasion yet. Moscow says it's not planning an incursion into Ukraine. It's rather concerned about NATO's expansion eastward and into Ukraine. The Western alliance has been deploying troops and military hardware in Russia. That includes a contingent of U.S. forces that was stationed in Poland on Saturday. Based on a UN report, North Korea pressed ahead with the development of its nuclear and missile programs last year, despite international sanctions. The country continued to seek material, technology, and know-how for those programs, including through cyber means and joint scientific research. The document added that Pyongyang also kept developing its capability for the production of fissile materials. Pyongyang is under major sanctions over its nuclear and missile programs. Denuclearization talks with Washington have stalled. North Korea conducted a record of 7 missile tests in January alone. The country says it feels threatened by the U.S. military presence in South Korea and their joint exercises. It says it needs to boost its defense capacity in the face of potential threats. Well, we've spoken to public analyst Andrew Leung for his thoughts about the UN report. He says members of the Security Council need to adopt trust-building measures in their dealings with North Korea.
This kind of a broken record of past failed tactics don't work anymore. In fact, the UN report must be a wake-up call to the United States and other members of the Security Council that really, to deal with North Korea, you've got to think outside the box by reciprocal kind of concessions. In other words, one concession for one pullback from the armament, and then building up trust. So it's kind of step by step. One has got to understand what the Koreans want. They don't want to attack other countries. They're too weak for that. They want national security, some sort of a guarantee, and they haven't got it. So that's what's happening.
A days-long rescue operation for five-year-old Moroccan boy Ryan trapped down a well has come to an end. Unfortunately, he did not make it. The boy died before it could be rescued, and his body was retrieved from the well on Saturday night. Firefighters were at work for 5 days in a risky earth-moving operation. The pace of drilling slowed down the final few hours to avoid any vibrations that would send the flimsy structure of the well collapsing. Rescue teams had been providing the boy with food, water, and oxygen through a tube. Ryan was playing near the well on Tuesday before he fell into the 32-meter-deep hole. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who is taught me the art of
journalism. Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 6th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And here, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I congratulate you on the 10 days done, that is the period marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979. Congratulations to all freedom-seeking and all justice-seeking people around the world.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. Actually, these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us, an electronic kind of QSL. So, here, I send my warm appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, Kurt Ettlinger from Germany, and Bill McDavid from the U.S. So, Rob, Kurt, and Bill, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And, of course, we've received so many letters and emails from around the world, which some of them focus on the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails and letters. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. It's a congratulations message. It's such a great email as I can see it. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands also has sent us an email. Tausif Abbas from Pakistan has also congratulated the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Muhammad Khaku, one of our regular listeners from the U.S., has sent us an email congratulating the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. And the last but not the least is an email from India from Mukesh Kumar. So, after a short break, I will be back with these great emails from around the world. Stay with us, please. So we start today's emails and letters with an email from Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our old and regular listeners. It's such a long email, so let's see what Jayanta says. Dear staff, as a long-time regular listener to the useful and informative programs of IRIB English Radio and a well-wisher of Iran, I take this opportunity to wish all Iranian people my best wishes and felicitations on the happy occasion of the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. February 11th is an important day in the annals of the cherished Iranian history. I understand that in 1979, on this very day, the despotic rule of the Shah of Iran was overthrown to establish the modern Islamic state of Iran, led by the able and dynamic leadership of Imam Khomeini, God bless his soul. It is a fact of wonder and appreciation that despite 43 long years of illegal and immoral sanctions of the U.S. and other Western powers, the heroic and dynamic people of Iran have been largely successful in making sustained growth and development in various spheres of human activity. The world has acknowledged the prowess of Iranian research and expertise in agriculture, science, and technology. Today, Iran can proudly demonstrate its spectacular advancement in space and nanotechnology, nuclear energy, medicine, agriculture, engineering, and other high-tech sectors. It has also been largely successful in fighting the menace of the COVID pandemic. Present-day Iran is a regional power and a responsible country in the Committee of Nations. I wish Iran and its hardworking and intelligent citizens a bright future in the days ahead. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. And many thanks for writing such a great email. And thank you very much for sending us this congratulatory message about the the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979. And actually, I was surprised by the bulk of knowledge and information you had about the Islamic Republic of Iran and its advancements, its developments. And it was great, as you said, Iran can proudly demonstrate its spectacular advancements in the space and nanotechnology, nuclear energy, medicine, agriculture, engineering, and it shows that you are following up the developments in the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course you are following up the news in IRIB English Radio. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, many thanks again for writing this email. Write to us soon, and we are looking forward to hearing from you, and we are waiting for such great emails from you about IRIB English Radio broadcast and, of course, the developments in Iran. We go to another email from Rob Dan Boer from the Netherlands. Rob from the Netherlands says, "Dear Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, I'm glad to confirm your broadcast today. That is 6040 kilohertz here in the city of Hainaut, the Netherlands. I heard that 1945 UTC, a female telling a religious story about Islam in English language, which I found it quite interesting. Please verify my report by your EQSL. Thank you very much. First of all, salam and warm greetings from Iran to you, Rob Dan Boer from the Netherlands. We are so happy to have this email from you. You heard our broadcast at the information you mentioned in this email, and you heard a story about Islam in English language, which you found it very interesting, and it's great. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Thank you very much for writing this email to us, Rob Den Boer from Netherlands. Write to us soon, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. We are waiting for your views about the programs of IRIB English Radio. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from Tausif Abbas from Pakistan, one of our regular listeners. So here we have another congratulation message on the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. And this time, this congratulation message is from Tausif Abbas from Pakistan. Let's see what he says. Greetings and congratulations on the occasion of the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Republic of Iran to you all. What impresses me about your revolution is that how one individual changed the whole dynamics of the West Asia region in particular and the world in general. How selflessness of the leader can achieve such a success and can result in ousting of dictators and oppressors. The outstanding features of Imam Khomeini, God bless his soul, as the person were selflessness, the vision, the spirituality, the humbleness to others, kindness and to others, and many others. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Tausif Abbas from Pakistan, and many thanks for writing this message, and thank you for sending us this congratulatory message on the occasion of the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. And it was kind of you to express such information about Iran and actually the selfless and matchless personality of the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, late Imam Khomeini, God bless his soul. Tausif Abbas from Pakistan, write to us soon, and also we are waiting for more views of you, and of course, particularly your views about the programs of IRIB English Radio. And from the U.S., we have an email from Mohammad Khaku, one of our regular listeners. Mohammad Khaku says, sincere greetings and best wishes to fellow Iranians and all well-wishers around the globe on this happy occasion of Iran's 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution victory. It gives me great pleasure to convey my sincere greetings and best wishes to fellow Iranians and all well-wishers around the globe on this happy occasion. The Islamic Republic of Iran is blessed with its oil and gas wealth as well as its highly educated population, which has made formidable inroads in the areas of science and technology. In spite of the sanctions, Iran makes highly sophisticated military and medical equipment, and these all can be enumerated as the fruits of the Islamic Revolution. Salam and warm greetings to you, Mohammad Khaku from the U.S., and thank you very much for sending us this congratulatory message on the occasion of the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. And thank you for reflecting your views about the developments in Iran. And actually, it was great, your knowledge and your information about the actually the advancements of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Iranian people. So Mohammad Khaku from the U.S., write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English radio programs. And we are waiting for more emails from you and your views about different matters, including IRB English radio broadcast. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from India from Mukesh Kumar. So stay tuned. Welcome back. Mukesh Kumar from India has sent us a message. He says, dear sir, madam, greetings. I and my club are English radio enthusiasts. On behalf of all our club members, I send our love to you via this email. God bless you. Salam and warm greetings to you, Mukesh Kumar from India, and thank you very much for sending us this email. We are so happy and we are proud that you and your club members are IRIB English radio enthusiast. So, Mukesh Kumar from India, why you and your club members don't tell us actually your views about IRIB English radio broadcast? Yes, we are waiting for them. So write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. So here we reach to the next section of our program, which is, of course, this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Let's take a listen.
Well, my name is Christopher Lewis. I live in the United Kingdom, in the West Midlands in England. My hobbies include, of course, shortwave listening and listening to other broadcasts from different parts of the world. I also enjoy reading and growing vegetables, gardening, all these different hobbies. And I have to say that shortwave listening is probably my best out of all of these. But in general, I've been reading about the Islamic Revolution quite in depth over the past couple of years. I'm still absorbing lots of information about it. And I'd just like to read some of my personal impressions that I've gathered from reading various sources on the internet and also from books. Basically, the revolution created high moral values in Iranian society. It created a sense of self-respect, and it's also an example to other nations of how society can live together peacefully. The revolution also represented the Iranian ideals and brought them forward. It was also a protest against ancient imperialistic influences as well. And going further on, it also created and brought forward Iran's freedom from oppressive regimes, and it also is an inspiration to a lot of people around the world who are repressed. It also shows the world and proves to the world that Iran, of course, is not dependent on any other nations for its survival. And Imam Khomeini brought into reality all that the Iranian people had hoped for. It's created Iran as a well-functioning nation, and has also enabled the founding of good relations with many nations around the world who value the same high moral standards. And I think that it's most important that we create sound understanding of each other's cultures, and also improve education about culture, expanding any myths and misunderstanding that can be created by the most part by mass media. From my point of view, and people of similar thinking, that the Iranian revolution has proved that you don't have to be bossed around by any other organization, you don't have to be told how to live. It's sort of like a shining beacon to peoples, you know, around the world, not just in Europe, but in other countries of the world. It's proved that it's a strong power, and it's a sovereign nation. It's just very, very encouraging.
And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I, on behalf of all our Arab English radio staff, congratulate you on the 10 days done, which is a period marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979. Congratulations to all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world on the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Dear listeners, please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio. Take care and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The very first revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way,
did not decrease or increase its goals is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
جانم تپشم سخنم باشد وطنم وطنم ای خان که گوهر خیز بهره وطنم قدمم عشقم سخنم قسمم از عاشقی لبریز.
Congratulations on the victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. In the limelight.
Because the Zionist regime has no way to justify its crimes against Palestinians, and apartheid is one of the most serious crimes against humanity there is, smearing critics as Jews haters is the last weapon in Israeli regime's propaganda arsenal, says Michael F. Roundrider in an article titled "The Zionist Regime's Smears Against Amnesty Fail to Hide Apartheid." Stay tuned for more. Mark Dubowitz, CEO of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a pro-Israeli regime group, slammed Amnesty International's new report on the Zionist regime's apartheid as anti-Semitic. No surprise there. He was echoing the line pushed by the Zionist regime and its lobby for days. The Dubowitz organization has worked closely with the Zionist regime's covert efforts to smear its critics around the world. It's worth highlighting that the Dubowitz's attempt to use the International Remembrance Alliance's so-called identification of anti-Semitism to claim that fact-based criticism of the Zionist regime policy equals anti-Jewish hatred. The Dubowitz tweeted recently that Amnesty is anti-Semitic. Their slurs against the Jewish state meet the internationally recognized IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, he claimed. The IHRA definition, promoted by the Zionist regime and its lobby groups, conflates criticism of the Zionist regime and its ideology, Zionism, on the one hand, with anti-Jewish bigotry on the other hand. It has become one of the main tools of censorship in the handful of Western regimes where it has been adopted. Because the Zionist regime has no way to justify its crimes against Palestinians, and apartheid is one of the most serious crimes against humanity there is, smearing critics as Jew haters is the last weapon in the Zionist regime's propaganda arsenal. Lara Friedman, president of the Foundation for Middle East Peace, critiqued Dubowitz's framing. Friedman tweeted, "Amnesty's new report is a great opportunity for opponents of criticism of Israel to illustrate that, indeed, delegitimizing factual criticism of Israel is, in fact, the real objective of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism." The Zionist regime officials led with a heavy-handed approach before the publication, trying to get out ahead of the report. Their alarm is understandable. Amnesty is perhaps the world's best-known human rights group. With chapters in dozens of countries, it has not merely launched a report about the Zionist regime apartheid, but a global campaign to end it. The group has put a lot of effort into presenting its findings in a clear and accessible way. The Zionist regime simply cannot overcome the mountain of evidence, so all it can do is attack the messenger. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid predictably called Amnesty's report false, biased, and anti-Semitic, a line that has been echoed by many other officials and lobby groups. But in the end, their false claims only served to further publicize Amnesty's report and broaden discussion about how the fake regime of Israel perpetrates apartheid. At the State Department's press briefing recently, the AP's Matt Lee called out the spokesperson Ned Price for the U.S. double standard for frequently accepting Amnesty's positions on other human rights concerns, but rejecting the group's analysis when it comes to the Zionist regime's violations of Palestinian rights. Price had earlier stated that we reject the view that Israel's actions constitute apartheid. Asked about the Zionist regime officials terming the report anti-Semitic, Price did object, saying, "We certainly reject the label that has been attached to this." But in the next breath, he reverted to IHRA language, suggesting that criticizing the Zionist regime, which receives billions of dollars of weapons from Washington every year, could well constitute a double standard and therefore indicate bigotry. He leaves Palestinians and equal rights for them out of the equation. Once more, anti-Palestinian racism is clear. We think that it is important, as the world's only Jewish state, and the Jewish people must not be denied their right to self-determination, and we must ensure there is a double standard being applied, unquote. Tom Knight, the U.S. ambassador to the occupied territories, didn't try to weaponize the anti-Semitism charge. He attempts simply to dismiss the Amnesty report as if it were self-evidently ridiculous. He tweeted, "Come on, this is absurd. That is not language that we have used and will not use." Knight said nothing about Amnesty becoming the third major rights group to release a report concluding that the Zionist regime commits the crime of apartheid since the election of President Joe Biden. Those groups and the many Palestinians who have for decades shown how the Zionist regime perpetrates apartheid are not voices the U.S. ambassador is open to hearing. But this colleague, John Kerry, currently the U.S. climate envoy, did raise the Zionist regime's apartheid at least as a future possibility back when he was U.S. Secretary of State during the Obama administration. At the time, commentator Philip Weiss asked, "How long are you allowed to issue dire predictions of future apartheid when there have been two sets of laws for different ethnicities under the Zionist regime sovereignty for 47 years of occupation?" Three major reports later, and U.S. officials still refuse to grapple with the grim reality. There is no other conclusion than that anti-Palestinian racists head the Democratic and Republican political parties. One month they laud Bishop Desmond Tutu following his death, and then the next day dismiss charges of the Zionist regime apartheid as absurd and fail to take to heart Tutu's own observations about the Zionist regime. American politicians offered a variety of reactions, including one from congressional candidate Wade Araf, a co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement. Unsurprisingly, the deniers of the apartheid really were also out in force. And tennis superstar Martina Navratilova challenged Congresswoman Chantal Brown, a Democrat, over her denial of the apartheid reality. The New York Times, for its part, had simply ignored Amnesty's report. The BBC website did carry an article about Amnesty's report giving the Zionist regime foreign minister Lapid the last word to smear it. But like the New York Times, the BBC's flagship News at 10 program omitted mention of the Amnesty report, though it did have a space for a story on Wurl, the viral internet puzzle. Of course, apartheid doesn't fit the five-letter limit on that word game, nor does censor. The Washington Post, by contrast, ran quite a good piece. And journalist Miriam Berger made sure to note that Palestinians have been making the case that this is apartheid for far longer than Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and Israeli human rights group B'Tselem. Berger wrote, Palestinians have long used the language of apartheid to describe Israel's system of governance since the country's founding following the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, during which some 700,000 Palestinians fled or were expelled from their homes, and the military occupation of the West Bank, Al-Quds, and the Gaza Strip in 1967. Although the Zionist regime and its supporters are pushing back hard, their smears and deflections are failing to hide that the fabricated regime of Israel is an apartheid regime.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Thank you for joining us here today. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a beautiful tradition narrated from Imam Baqir alayhi salam regarding the world, the dunya. This tradition is in fact a parable or an example that the Imam gives regarding the world in order to help us understand what this dunya is. It's interesting to note that God Almighty also gives a similar parable in the Holy Quran. Let's look at the parable that God mentions for the world in the Holy Quran before we turn to the tradition of Imam Baqir. In this verse, God Almighty says, "Draw for them the parable of the life of this world. It is like the water we send down from the sky. Then the earth's vegetation mingles with it. Then it becomes chaff scattered by the wind, and Allah is omnipotent over all things." So God Almighty, He compares the life of this world, the world, to water that comes from the sky. This water turns into vegetation of the earth. This vegetation dries up and is scattered by the wind. Right? Something very temporary and transient. In a similar fashion, the Imam alayhi salam says, "Consider your sojourn in this world just as a house that you have stayed in and soon departed from." Right? It's very transient, very temporary. You come here for a temporary time being and then you leave from it. The Imam then continues and says, "Or an object of perfection that you witnessed in a dream. Then you awoke and not a thing from it remained with you." Right? So this parable emphasizes the impermanence of the world. At the same time, it's transient nature, it's temporary nature. And Imam is also conveying the fact it's not something that we can take with us in the continuation of our journey towards God. And then the Imam says, "I have given you this parable because this world, according to the people of intellect and knowledge of Allah, is just as the shadow in the shade." But this is also emphasizes the same concept that the Imam was speaking about, which is the impermanence of the world, because like a shadow, just like a shadow is impermanent, it's there for a second. The moment that the sun moves a little bit, the shadow vanishes. Right? So, but at the same time, another thing we can kind of infer from this tradition is that this world is also like a shadow of the hereafter. It's also a reflection of the hereafter. There's a cause effect relationship between this world and the other world. Just like the shadow of a person reflects the person, it's an effect of that person, and it kind of indicates him. Does the same thing, this world also indicates the other world. It's a shadow of it, it's an effect of it, but at the same time, it's impermanent, like a shadow, it's transient. It's not something that we can attach our hearts to. Rather, we should attach our hearts to the thing that the shadow is a shadow of. In a similar fashion, we should attach our hearts to the hereafter, not to this world. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the parable of the world in the words of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to